You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Atlas walls, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Where the party gonna have? Out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Marco Bill, and Tom didn't make it. He was going to come on for 15 minutes, but I think he probably couldn't make it. So Alex and myself are here, and I'm going to start the show off tonight with a little bit of our shout-outs. We still have to get our first guest on the air here, and so while Alex is with our, we're going to take our second guest as the first guest, and as Alex goes along there, I'm going to try to contact him to get him on. He probably is either trying to dial in, or I'll have to get him on a different way. From our shout-outs, Alex, are you on there, my friend?
I'm here, Marco.
Oh, there you are, Rob. Rob is there. Alex, are you on the the computer right now? In our little chat room?
I am. You want to do a shout-out to our chat room guests?
We got you got it, my people. Friend. And then I'll do the shout-out to the six and the, everybody.
Excellent. Well, we got Becky in there. We got Bill Green. Becky up in the Northwest. We got Bill Green. We got BA in Vermont. We got Chief Mogi wants to chase her. That's Mitch. We got Cliff R. in New York. Excuse me, Cliff. Connie Gilbert, Davo. Davo's in there a couple of times. That we like that, Davo. We got I'm a naysayer. That's okay, too. We allow naysayers. as long as you're polite. Then we got my great friend, Lee Joyner in Texas. Love you, Lee. How you doing, buddy? Hopefully see you soon. And we got Leroy Blevins is in there. He's one of our guests tonight, right, Marco? He's
That's
in
right.
the chat room, please. And we got Mike K. in Ohio. And we got Mount Monadnock. So that's something from back home in New England and the Northeast. Welcome, Mount Monadnock. We got Navajo Bigfoot, Mike out there in the Northeast area of Arizona. We got Rex Howdyshell, my great buddy, Rex Howdyshell. Love you, Rex. And the Squatch Tech, Jan Allen going by a new name, Squatch Tech. And then we got Wes Rocks. Wes Rocks, been in the chat room pretty consistently lately. He joined my forum, too. Wes Rocks. And then we got a bunch of guests in there. Guests are allowed. So, how you doing, Marco?
I'm doing great. Well, everybody, as always, we have friends of the family and good old friends out there and listeners out there that are not feeling too good. And I'd just like to sort of kind of give a shout-out to all of our sick and injured people. Alex, of course, you're doing better, but boy, I want to tell you, you've been going through some awful stuff. We all wish you, send you prayers to get better and heal better. Jody's had a knee operation, and during that recovery, she's also had several other issues that are even more serious. She's had some infection issues and things like that, and she's recovering from that. She's one of our guests tonight. And Mitch White's mother seems to be doing better and is doing much better now, which is good. I guess prayers must work. And then the last thing here is Jody has a very good friend. Her name is Vicky. And she went into the hospital today. Jody came on the show tonight to be with us. But her friend is with Vicky in the hospital right now, and she's not doing very well at all. So we'd like to send some special prayers out for Vicky. And hope that she can recover and get back to health again. That's what we have tonight, there, Alex. our first guest tonight, as everybody knows, last week Rob was on, and he was going through a clandestine incident that took place where we had two guys. And it involved a whole bunch of things. But we left off, Rob, where we left off, I think, is where the two men had been held up against their will with these other people. And I guess the two creatures that they killed a couple of creatures, and they burned one. And you had said they had some documents, basically, that some government agencies that basically said that they Corner had a hit out on these two guys and we're trying to get rid of them. Is that true?
That's correct, Marco. The document itself was definitely, I would have to say, in my opinion, it was an authentic document. I've actually seen it with my own eyes, held it in my own hands. The ink marks on it were done by the old style printer. I mean, it was an actual impact of what they call a dot matrix printer.
Yeah.
And, you know, typically the military and anything to do with those type of organizations still do batch processing. They use the old style of printers because they don't have any need for color because it's just strictly data. It's cut and dry. That's all they're interested in, is having it documented, straight data. And those printers print so much faster than any other type of conventional laser jets or ink jets, unless you want to spend the money and the financing on a full-run printing press. You could probably pick one of those printers up for about $12,000 or $15,000, a really good one. And that thing will print 6,000 pages every 2 or 3 minutes. So, like I said, I actually went through the document. It was an authenticated document. It has two signatures on it. The signatures at the time was, in fact, the names in text, and then it was sent off and signed and then sent back and then signed again to validate its authenticity. It was and the signatures were of the deputy director of the CIA and the deputy director of the FBI at the time. The FBI went to wit's end with these two individuals. They done had all they could take of them. And they pretty much, at this point in time, from what this document describes, contacted the CIA, and it probably went out to a bunch of other groups as well, of people, mercenary groups, anything, you know, that you could possibly think of. It would be somebody be doing some dirty work for the government. And it said that we authorize you to, you know, terminate them with extreme prejudice, and that was exactly the term used in the document. And it had these people's names, addresses, all that good stuff. I mean, their whole life information pretty much was on these sheets. You wouldn't have any trouble finding someone anywhere in the world with that much information on their whereabouts and their contacts. So that's what leads me to believe that it was, you know, a truly authentic document. Was it not the fact that you know, anybody could write things up and whatnot, but nobody is a meticulous and goes line by line, itemizes things, and actually puts a legend up in the top for code names, clarifying what they mean when they say this code name in a transmission. And it constantly refers back.
Sorry. How did they come across this document? Obviously, they, weren't supposed to see it. So how did they claim to have come across this document?
Well, like I said, at the time that these interviews were taking place, we did not have any idea of this third party that happened to be privy to this information and was on these expeditions right along with the other two guys. The third party, the two guys I'm talking about are brothers. The third party was a friend. You got two brothers and a father is the party that went out. And that was when we interviewed and talked to the brothers. That was the information we were given. You see, it's kind of hard to sort it all out because it's just a ton of information. I'm trying to get it out there in the best way I possibly can, but without actually having all my stuff readily available where I can go through it and thumb through it. It's hard for me to correlate it, but I'm trying to tell you the method we use behind doing these types of investigations. You get another party that comes up and says, "Oh, I was there with them." And then he brings the pictures. And he's like, "Yeah." And, I mean, I can verify and see in the picture, yeah, that's the two brothers, and that's the father, and this is the guy here. I was like, "So,
right. How did they get this document?" Obviously, they must have done some investigative work to get this document that was on themselves. Did they mention how they came across that?
I'm still sorting that in my head. The best answer I could give right now is I really don't know how they got it. I can only speculate. And when I speculate, I say that probably the two brothers that were interconnected with the government and whatnot, they had access to it. At some point in time or another, or they had a close friend that was looking out for them. Because, like I said, they worked for the government. They could have a close friend that was a colleague that says, "Hey, I just saw this, and you guys need to see it. And, you know, you guys are in trouble." You know, that kind of thing. That's all I can speculate as to how the document actually appeared. Because the story behind the document is we just got the thing. And how we got it, I don't know exactly. But all I know is we have it, and it all matches up, you know, to the things that these guys are saying.
Got it. So we're not sure about it yet. Got you. So go ahead. That's one of my favorite stories.
But as it turns out, what I was saying earlier, that the third party member revealed a lot more. You know, as you say, you get more details and collect more details, you shine more light on the subject matter because you get a different opinion, a different point of view as to what was going on exactly at the time when you had the two individuals that do the...
Hello?
One of which actually refuses to talk to us at this time. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you cut out for a couple seconds.
Well, I'm on the landline. I don't know why I would be cutting out. But all I can say is on that particular subject matter is one of the guys, we actually contacted him because both of the brothers were not there. The father's already deceased. So we have one of the brothers. We got one of the original three party members, so he claims that's who we're talking to at first. And then the other guy that's been living off the grid comes up, who is not his brother, but happened to be the third party that was with him. It's and the way he describes the story is, you know, it's pretty much the same, but it has a few more details in it. It lets up some light and says some things that the other guy wasn't willing to talk about, you know, when it comes to the government, when it comes to how things transpired. Exactly. I mean, you know, the first guy didn't say anything about this, that, and the other and killing them, or he, you know, mentioned the experience of one, but not two. He spoke about killing the first one, but not they went back after the government told him not to and done it again. You know, all these were details that were gathered from the other party member that was there, that the first guy that we talked to said wasn't there. And he's got the, you know, actual evidence to back it up. I mean, you can't argue with a picture. I mean, obviously these guys know each other because they're together in pictures. So they were together at one point in time or another. As far as what happened to them, I couldn't tell you as to why they don't communicate or why they don't have anything to do with each other. Maybe one of them thinks the other one's dead. I don't know. But, needless to say, back to the story, so we have this document now. And it's in our possession. I'm sure it might be released one day. It's going to have some blackout spots on it probably because we can't release everything. But, I mean, as far as names and whatnot, I mean, I'm sure people, some of these guys, you know, if they want their name out there, we can put it out there. If they don't, then we can't. But they actually killed two of these things that they said on that. And then, we go back to the third part, and he's like, uh-uh, we killed a lot more than that. He's like, we just killed those two, and then they found out that, look, we're good at this, and we're better at it than they are. So we're going to hire these guys to go out and take care of the problem. So the government actually hires these guys to go out and kill Bigfoot.
Hello? Yep, you're still there. We got you.
Okay. I'm getting a lot of static, and I'm hearing, you know, like people cutting in and out, so I don't know if somebody else is trying to talk or not.
No,
I think it's probably the show connection. It's probably the show connection. But you're doing fine, Rob. You're doing good, buddy. We're just letting you go on because there's no need to interrupt.
Well, anyway, the government hires these guys, and they start them out. According, this is the third party talking about this. The previous guy that we talked to didn't mention anything about, you know, getting a job, taking contracts on these things, kind of like trapping animals and turning in hides. Well, they actually contracted these group of individuals, these four men, to go out and hunt these creatures down and kill them. They start them out, and they say, we'll give you $30,000 for every one you kill, cash, tax-free, straight from the government. They just give them a bag when they bring the body.
What year was all this supposed to take place? How long ago has all this
started in the late 80s, and it goes all the way through the 90s. This didn't happen all overnight. I mean, all the events that led up to it happened in pretty close succession, I'd say probably 2 or 3 weeks' time, as far as getting abducted and the threats and all that stuff. But as far as them going out and doing the contract work on the side, I couldn't tell you exactly how long that is because I don't have all the details on that. We're hoping to, you know, shed more light on that subject matter in the near future and see if we can't get to the bottom of the whole story. And I assure you, once I get it all, I'm going to type up a full written document that's going to contain all the information in great detail as to what happened when, as close as possible, as close as we can possibly guesstimate dates and hours and times. But, this is just right now is in story form. This is, you know, as far as all the facts, I don't have them all right here in front of me. I mean, I have a good many facts on the subject matter, but I don't have them all right in front of me at this time. But, according to what the guy's telling us, the government agreed to pay them $30,000 a head for everyone they kill. They say, okay, they go out, they do their thing. They're traveling all over on the government's dime. Government's paying their expenses, from what I gathered, and the government's also give them a liaison because the government's giving them military facilities, military hardware to use. And doing this to aid them in their process, i.e., you know, night vision scopes, you know, night vision goggles with reticles in them, things like that, all kinds of, you know, really cool, neat tools that most civilians can't get their hands on. And even if you had the money, some of it you probably still couldn't get your hands on because it's strictly classified stuff. that they're playing with, toys. And they're out there, and the first, I think it was the first or either the second one, according to him, that they took out, their liaison got killed by one of these creatures. And from what I gathered, nobody ever really found out because they actually talked to the guy and you know, got to know him kind of personally, and I don't think they ever told his family or anybody did or anything as to what happened. You know, I can't get into great detail on that because I don't have all the details. I'm just going by what the guy said while I'm sitting there listening to him talk. And he said at that time we went back to the government and we told them that $30,000 was not enough and we wanted $50,000. Because this is some really dangerous stuff we're doing. We could get killed doing this. According to what the guy said, the liaison was sitting inside of a Hummer, which is an armored vehicle, an armored Hummer, straight up H1 Hummer, military issued. He's sitting inside the thing watching the screen, and this thing comes up and rips the door off of it, grabs him, and breaks his neck in there. This is according to the guy. This is what happened to him. As far as the validity of that goes, I have nothing to back it up. This is strictly, you know, hearsay. And at that time, they said, we've had enough, and we're going to either charge, you're going to either pay us more money, or we're not doing this no more because, you know, we got, this is dangerous. These guys were less than probably 300 yards from him, is what they said when this happened. And they go back to government and says, okay, fine, we'll pay you more. So they go out, and they keep doing it, and they kill about another 6 or 7. From what I gather, at some point in time in there, or the third-party guy tells me that I quit going with him after, I don't remember the exact time, but I think after they killed the fifth one, I think he said that was the end of his hunting experience with them, going out and doing this, and it was just the other three guys from then on. He said, but oh yeah, they kept doing it. So, and as far as what's going on up to date, I believe all of this ended somewhere around the year 2000. Just when all this came to a close, 99, 2000, they stopped working for them doing this stuff. Are they still affiliated with them? Probably, yeah, because, you know, the government's kind of like a marriage. Once you're in for life, especially when you get into a certain level. And, you know, it's the kind of one of those that really honors that till death do us part type deal because they know things that they shouldn't know. Or that the government feels that they shouldn't be able to know and still walk around in public and act like a civilian. So it's, you know, like I said, this is a really in-depth story. I wish I had everything where I could go over it from top to bottom, but at this particular juncture, I don't.
Well, then these guys just stopped talking with us, right?
What's that, Marco?
They stopped talking with us.
That's correct. Remember, all you guys that were listening to the show at the time, we were going to do 3 weeks in a row, 3 hours, dedicated to this one particular guy, one of which has never been on the show, to my knowledge.
Right.
But the particular guy that we're talking about came on the show for the first 2 weeks. And after that, the third week come around, he was supposed to, you know, really close in the gaps and the details at the very of what happened at the, you know, the finalization of the process of his employment with the government, his contract with the government, and he never came back on. And we have since not been able to contact him up until, I think, recently.
Did they use code names when they were on, Rob, or did they use their real names? I forget. I'm just asking you.
They used false names.
Okay.
But anyway, there was only one guy. We didn't get both of them on. One of them that lives off the grid, he's not going to do anything like that. I don't think he'll be on the phone long enough to do an hour-long TV show, radio show, because he doesn't want to be found.
Right. He was very scared when we tried to contact him. Well then, when are you going to? No, when are you planning? You're planning. No, you've been following this up for quite some time now, and you're still working on it. I'm assuming, right?
Yes, I'm still working on it. I've still got several holes and, you know, things that I'm working out as far as the details that conflict with each other, because conflicting details, and a lot of it just has to do with communication. If I could actually get in touch with the said individuals, then a lot of this would be a lot quicker.
Right.
I'm having to go back and relook through old notes and dig up all my old notes and things like that from 2 years ago.
No, I understand, yeah. I understand.
And I'm just trying to get it all back together because we took pictures and, you know, we had got some of it, I think, on tape somewhere, but I haven't located it yet. I've got it put up in archive. But I'm still working on getting all that stuff together. When I get it together, I'll have something, you know, a solid package we can put up there on the webpage on it.
Well, man, I appreciate you coming on and telling this, refreshing us on this, too. When I first seen it, I mean, when I heard about it, it was just, my jaw dropped. And when I talked to him a couple times on the phone, and the last time when he refused to come on again, he just said, "Diane, can't come on anymore. I'm fearing for my life, basically, and we want to get out of here." He says, "Other people are listening." And he wanted to get out of there. The other guy completely refused to come on at all.
Well, that's very true. I mean, since the passing of the Patriot Act, FBI can tap any phone anywhere, anytime, without a court order, or a warrant.
Well, thanks, Rob, for sharing with us tonight. I appreciate your time. I know you're busy.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on and share the story with everyone. Like I said, you know, you take it with a grain. I mean, you have to take some of it with a grain. I mean, because you're sitting there and they're throwing some. I mean, I was just as shocked. I mean, can you imagine sitting in front of somebody and hearing this? Over his shoulder like he's being watched. I mean, he's sitting there constantly in the chair, shifting everywhere, looking, you know, just fidgety and nervous and sweating, thinking somebody's watching him, somebody's listening to him, and for all I know, they could be. Somebody dressed up, you know, an agent or something, dressed up as a normal civilian sitting around, you wouldn't know it, sitting in a pizza parlor.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of these things, you know, they take you by surprise, but like I said, you have to keep fighting the good fight, and you can't publish everything you hear as fact. Just like I said, why I say take this story and this incident with a grain of salt, because a lot of it can't be validated. There are some parts of it that can be.
All you can do is reproduce what you receive from the people.
But what's so strange about it is what can be validated holds true. So gathered from that, that builds a little bit of credibility.
Yes.
You know, you kind of have to feel somebody when they give you this much information, and then somebody else gives you some hard evidence that backs up what the other guy said. But some of the stuff he said you don't have hard evidence for, so you are, you have to give somebody the benefit of the doubt sometime.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time. We're running a little bit late right now, Rob. I need to get our other guest on here, otherwise we'll run out of time. But thanks for coming on. We'll have you on again. And we'll keep in touch with you. And thanks for coming on and taking the time to come on the show.
As always, appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, hit your *6 button, buddy, and then if you got time, listen to the rest of the show. We got some pretty good guests on.
Sure thing.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
Hi, buddy.
Hi, Tom.
How are you?
I'm just doing good.
Youngblood, you did a good job. Thanks for filling in. By the way, Forgive me, guys. I had to give another interview, and I'm only going to stay on for a few minutes here. I just want to tell everybody good evening. Hello out there in the Bigfoot world and around the globe. Bigfoot Lives 2 is out. It's incredible. It's going to blow your mind. I want to thank Lee Joyner, the first guy that bought it. You know, if you can't thank our own friends and family, there's no place, nobody you can really thank, Marco.
Yeah, I know. That's right.
It's just totally amazing. Just totally, totally amazing. Lee Joyner and Don Creel via Chuck Creel. And you want to see what Chuck Creel looks like and what his area looks like, ladies and gentlemen, get the film. The only place you can get it is at searchingforbigfoot.com. We're not going to put it on Amazon.com for about 60 days. We're going strictly through our website at the present time. But I'm going to tell you something. Get ready, America. Tom Bacardi and his team are leaving this week all around the globe on some interesting stories. We're talking about stories that we're going to take the lid off the jar. We're just going to put it out there, let you see it as we see it, when we see it, and how we see it. It's going to be up to you now. So all these special ops operations, you're going to see it the way we see it. Marco Bill is going to be putting up that stuff on a daily basis that we send to him. We're going to be hitting areas, and I just got a confirmation early this afternoon from Alaska. And thank you for that, Marco. Appreciate it. We're at Fort Lewis up in Washington, the Blackfeet Nation, with our friends and family up there with Bruce Schilt. I understand the chief is coming out with the whole tribe and the elders. The publicity that's going to be given in Arkansas is going to be off the chain. Jim Dawson arranged for a bunch along with Alex, the Green Swamp outside of Tampa, Florida. Look out. Marcus Bekus up in Four Corners. The next 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, watch, keep your ears to the ground, your eyes to the skies, because we're going to be blitzing the United States of America, and they're going to know that Tom Biscardi and his Searching for Bigfoot crew is out and back bigger than ever. Marco, I don't mean to interrupt you, my good buddy, but it just I told you I want to stop in and just say hello to everybody. Number one, number two. We're on the road here, and you know we're traveling to our next stop. But I'll tell you guys this. You will be hearing from us in the next 3 weeks loud and clear. You're going to be seeing things and hearing things about the Bigfoot world that you've never heard before, ladies and gentlemen, and we are going to be bringing them to you. I've assembled the A-team on this jaunt. I'm talking about the best of the best, the creme de la creme. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be out there. You're going to see it at first hand, as we see it, when we see it, and how we see it, like I've always told you in the past. Thank you, Marco. Thank you to all the people in the chat room, to Connie and to my gentle giant and Becky, to Dave-O. Dave-O, we're going to be seeing you pretty soon here. Bill Green, Alex, you know we're coming out to get you, and Chief, Mitch, we're coming out to get you also. But you guys, and Rex, I got to tell you, son, you have no clue. You look great in the new movie. It is great. You need to see it, Rex. You really look like a true professional that you are. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to go. God bless each and every one of you. Marco, thank you so much for filling in. And you can fill him in about later, about how you're going to have all this stuff on a daily basis for everybody. With
yes, well, I will. Yeah. Okay. You have a good trip, Tom.
God bless you.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Tom Biscardi. And our next guest, we're running a little late here, but Jody. Jody, how are you? I'm going to tell you what, Jody, I'm going to unmute you. There you are, Jody. You're unmuted.
Okay. How are you?
How you doing? Well, Jody, I'll tell you what. We're going to have you on a couple of times here just to catch up. But basically, way back in August time, July and August time frame of last year, you were on for about 2 or 3 weeks, and you're going through things. Would you like to start out and just let us know, where were you at? You were in Nevada, is that correct?
No, Kentucky. Kentucky.
Oh, in Kentucky,
Hansburg.
Okay. In Kentucky.
Hansburg. And when that guy was talking about the government, that kind of freaked me out because...
Well, why don't you start from the beginning, Jody? Just say what had happened. You had some encounters, correct?
Yes, a lot. And before the government got involved and started scaring us, and Matt Moneymaker, these things, I started learning about them. And when I started seeing them, I would feed them, like I told you. And one time I had to hold a gun in one's face. That's because I thought it was going to kill me. And what I'm trying to tell people out there is what I've learned from them and how to catch them, you know, on tape.
Why don't you tell us how you went about
having your encounters with these creatures?
They got to come to us. I mean, when we first bought the property.
Were you in an area where there were woods? And
yes, a lot of woods. The neighbors are far apart. And I know there's more than one clans. There's a bunch, like different clans, you know. And I know some didn't get along with each other because they would fight, you know, if they come on our property. And when they would fight, you know, for a long time and out back. But when they would scream, you hear their screams or knocks, I think they're wanting to let the other ones know they're coming across the property, their territory, you know, that they're coming. And then some were very vicious, you know, some were mean.
What size were these things? Did they vary?
The biggest ones we've seen, I know he was around 10 feet or a little bigger. And that was scary one. That was a scary one. when they traveled in groups. But when I got those three on tape, I mean, that when I tricked them, you know, like I told you how I tricked them on tape. Because they come across the road to our property on our side, and when they saw the camera out in the open, I had a camera just laying there, video, to trick them, and I had one hidden in the tree. And when I hid the one in the tree facing that one, I said, this is the only way we're going to be able to get them. It took me a couple years to figure it out because they wouldn't go in front of the lens. And when two of them dropped all fours, the big one, the 10-foot one, stood there behind it studying it. You know, they studied the camera.
Uh-huh.
And really looked at it and not go in front of that lens whatsoever. And they were smart about it. And I had to feed them a lot. You know, because I want them not to hurt us. You know, so I try to feed them all the time. We feed them salmon.
Oh, they like fish.
Yeah, we feed them. We buy them salmon, and that's got costly. I mean, because we wanted to keep them out back towards the back path away from the house, but that didn't work. I mean, they come up to the house, and they broke the back door open while we were in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one pool broke the lock and all and started slapping the floor. And then the one in the front come up on the steps. It's so heavy, it shook the floor when it come up the steps. And that's the one I held the gun in its face. And I think we had to stare off. It felt like forever. I mean, that's the first time. I mean, I really felt like we went in each other's soul. I felt dread and doom and death. I mean, we both did. Jane did,
too. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Hi, Jody. Hey, now, you're not in this location anymore. You're safe now, right?
Yeah, because this is what I was trying to tell you when I guys talk about the government. This guy would come undercover with a different name and help us try to understand him, brought his pictures, and he had to use a different name. But then this helicopter started coming with these men in suits, and there's no number on the helicopter, like a license number. And they would come and almost land in the yard and stare me down, and I had a gun in their face, too. And it's like, come on, I'm tired of this. I mean, they weren't scared of me.
Now, what state was this in? First, you're not in the same state anymore, are you?
No, this is in Vanceburg, Kentucky. Where it happened.
It happened in Kentucky?
Yeah, in Vanceburg.
Vanceburg.
Now, you took videos. Now, you took videos, or you got a video of these things. Now,
yeah, and that moneymaker, that's the one that tried to get a lot of the videos from me. Because I found out from a lawyer, that's when I found out, thinking, why he tricked me, you know, using his cameras. Because the law was, if he used his cameras, then he was getting the tapes. I got some of the tapes from him, and I got in a big fight with him. I never met him. He sat down other people.
Right.
You know, and he would, they said, we want those tapes. Well, I hit a few, you know.
Well, could we have you on, you know, Jody, can we have you on next week? And what I'd like to do is go through, you know, you've told everybody about, you know, you've had these experiences and encounters with these things, and you took a video of them, and now you've went and you could tell the story of Matt Moneymaker starting next week, and we'll go through the whole thing. There's a lot to talk about, I know, a lot to tell. Is that okay?
I mean, I really want people to know that they're intelligent, and they do speak some kind of language.
Jody, did you say you have some of these videos, that you saved some? Can you send them to Marco or anything?
Yeah, I saved a few, but I got to go through. I wanted to go through and see if I got the right ones. I got some packed at my mom's or, you know, Ohio, and I can't say where. And I got, because when we moved, we was trying to hurry up and get things moved quick because things were starting to get dangerous. And I knew it was time we had to get out. And we did. We lost everything. We lost our property and everything. I mean, like that, our home.
Yeah.
Because these people that I don't know how high up they were in the service from government, but I got a feeling we were in trouble.
I'll tell you what, Jody, next week we'll have you on. What I'll be able to do is give you 15 minutes or 20 minutes to tell the whole thing. And that way we won't leave it halfway done. We're running late right now. What we could do is we'll have you back on next week to go through the whole Matt Moneymaker thing, from the video to all the Matt Moneymaker and all the other things that took place after you took the videos. Okay?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Why don't you just hit your *6 button? I appreciate you coming on tonight. I know you're not feeling well, and I know your good friend Vicky is in the hospital, and you're worried about her as well.
So,
why don't you hit your old *6 button, and we'll bring the next guest on, and then I'll have you on next week. I'll give you a call here in the next day or so. We'll make arrangements.
Okay. Thank you. No problem. Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Jody, and it's so wonderful to have you back again.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you then. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Jody Boone, and believe me, we can have about 3 or 4 shows. Jody has so much things to tell. And what we'd like to do now, though, is before we run out of time, I'd like to get Leroy on. Leroy, are you there, my friend? I guess I got
him. Yeah,
I'm sorry, Leroy. I forgot to click the thing. How you doing, Leroy? Are you there, Alex?
I'm here, Marco. How you doing?
Doing great. Well, Leroy, the last couple of weeks we've been talking about the Patterson-Gimlin film, and last week we went in a little bit about M.K. Davis and some of the things that he's been working on. And this past week you ran into some really... You keep getting deeper and deeper into this, Leroy.
What was that, Alex?
You got those waders on now as you get deeper and deeper into this. You know what?
Well,
you
can't let go. Why don't you go ahead and tell us, Leroy, all the things that have taken place here in the last couple of weeks?
All right, well, now M.K. Davis is coming out with a new movie, supposed to come out this fall, about incident in Bluff Creek, which he's going to probably show clips of the film and showing that Bigfoot was massacred there and a family of Bigfoot was massacred there and buried there and everything else. So with that in mind, that to me, I think actually John Green and Bob Gimlin should start taking this stuff a little bit more seriously, because of pure simple fact, when someone starts throwing issues around like this and claims around like this, that can get somebody in trouble in the long run.
Yeah, you were concerned. Well, you're kind of concerned about them, the legal side of this thing, because what they're claiming is a murder and that the creature is human, right?
Yes, that's what MK Davis is claiming.
And so that's not just killing a creature, but that's actually killing a human, and we have laws.
Yeah. Well, he's talking about a whole family of them now was killed there.
Yep. So why don't you go ahead and explain the whole thing?
Well,
just go through a scenario of what their claims are and things like that, and then because not everybody's seen the film. I do have the link up there on the website if you want to take a look at their trailer on it.
So. Oh, well, that was a trailer that I found on YouTube.
Yeah.
That they're talking about the film. Okay. Well, I'm going to put it this way. What everybody's looking at now, MK Davis and Bill Munns and every one of them, they're looking at a copy of the film that was made up by Ron Olson. That's why you see a lot of different colors in the film. That's why the color that MK Davis is pointing out is blood. It's not blood, it's just the colors that they added to the film. The original film was more of a grainy color. Bigfoot was black and everything else in the original film that Roger Patterson shot. The film that we're looking at now and people seeing on TV and stuff is a second generation, actually, of the film. It's not the original film. It's film coloring that was added to the film by Ron Olson when he took over the film for Roger Patterson. And that's what people got to look at. Now, MK Davis is not looking at that. He's looking at, well, this film's showing blood, and blood in a river, and in a creek bed there's blood on the sand, there's gunshots being fired at the Bigfoot, and the leg he was getting shot at, and everything else. You're looking at color images that was added to the film. You're not looking actually at the Bigfoot itself. You're looking at everything was added to the film in 1968, not what happened at Bluff Creek.
Leroy. Another thing is, I think you told me too, no matter how big and strong Bigfoot is, even 10 foot, if you shoot a hole through its leg with a high-powered rifle, it's going to flinch.
Oh, definitely. Just like if you think about this, okay, when you watch the film, you see him just strolling away, okay, not coming after him. If you actually ran after one, and I'm sitting here hearing stories and reports and stuff, and here you got a guy that has a rifle aiming at one, as Bob Gimlin was just covering. He didn't fire, but he did cover Roger Patterson, as he claims. Then you have Roger Patterson running after it with something shiny in its hand. That Bigfoot was going to turn around and attack if it was real to begin with. It's not going to let somebody come up on him, because I see somebody just go ahead and run after either a lion or any other kind of animal, because they're going to turn around and attack before you even get close to them.
Yeah, if you sneak up on them, they're going to run away, and if they can, they're going to defend themselves.
Well, that's true, too. Just like any kind of animals, the male is always going to be around, okay? Now, he's filming a female Bigfoot. Now, if he was filming a real female Bigfoot, then the male would have came out and attacked Roger and Bob. Because
that holds true with what Mitch and I have had happen in the last few weeks. We think we got a male and a female in camp, just like you say. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
But that's okay. But like I said, if there was a real female, people just don't understand that. When they look at this film, they're looking at, oh, this guy's reported, that guy's reported, this guy's reported. Just like when I did my research on the film, I went ahead and did my own research on it. I didn't base my research on, well, this person said this, or this person said that, or this person shows that. Because if I went ahead and did that, I'd be like everybody else. Oh, the film's real. It's 100% real and stuff like that. But with me going in what I did, looking at the film and making a costume, you know, just like that's one thing I want to bring up too, the claim of making a costume for years. And a matter of fact, when I was going on your show, when I was listening to the Archives of Tom's show today, there was a guy that had on air Pat Hembert or something when he had the show in 2007 with Greg Long, Bob Hieronymus, MK Davis.
Yeah, that was the 40th anniversary show.
Yeah, well, he was sitting there saying that, you know, he made a claim on your show that, you know, you have a lot of listeners, Tom, and stuff like that, and I'll ask anybody if they could produce a suit like that Patterson did, I'll give them $30,000, and I think that would be a deal. Well, hey, I made a copy of the suit.
Well, you did it, right?
Well, not only that, guess what, Leroy?
Huh.
on the same show, we also had the guy that made the costume, and he produced it.
I know.
Tom actually went over to see him, and he had a suit just like it.
Okay, now, Leroy, let's analyze some of your stuff here. You have a photo, and I believe it was supposedly taken, but correct me if I'm wrong, during the documentary filming that shows everybody, Bob Hieronymus, Bob Gimlin, Roger Patterson, and others. It's six or seven guys, even be some husses in the photo. Isn't it true that Bob Gimlin has said that he didn't even know Bob Hieronymus at the time?
Yeah, well, actually, that's what bothers me about it because, you know, they've been together for months, okay? Now, a lot of people hasn't seen a lot of frames that Roger Patterson filmed. He's been filming for over a year, okay? He's got like five, six, seven reels full of film that he was filming for his documentary that no one's never seen, and Bob Gimlin and all of them was with him during this whole time. But no one ever talks about the documentary. They always throw that to the side and just talk about the film and then the film itself. But here, just like that one photo you see with all six of them, okay, that was Roger Patterson, John Ballard, Jerry Merritt, Howard Hieronymus, Bob Gimlin, and Bob Hieronymus. And Bob Gimlin had his wig on because he was supposed to be the Indian tracker in it. That was taken by a man on film site, and Jerry Merritt gave it to his brother-in-law, Larry Lund. That's where that photo came in place.
Cool.
But that photo was taken 15 miles behind Bob Hieronymus' house up in the woods.
So it wasn't even in Bluff Creek. But yet, after this, Bob Gimlin has said that he didn't even know Bob Hieronymus back in those days, or at least one time he said that, right?
Yes, he did say that. But like I said, Bob Gimlin's story's changed over the years, too, just like here a couple of years ago. He claimed he didn't have nothing to do with the camera. That was all Roger Patterson. Roger Patterson had the camera with him the whole time. Well, who filmed Roger Patterson above Creek? But people don't realize that everything that you see in a Patterson and Gimlin film, okay, was shot in different locations. It was not all shot at Bluff Creek. The only part was shot at Bluff Creek was the Bigfoot walking and looks back with Bob Ross, you know what I'm saying, in the suit and looks back and then walks off. That's the only part of the Bluff Creek. All the rest of that was shot at different locations and just pieced in there by Ron Olson in 1968 to make the film longer, because the original film was only 30 seconds long. So he wanted to make the film longer where they could make more money off of it. He added more details to it. He had more scenes to it. And that's all the film was actually based upon anyway, was just to make them some quick, fast money.
Now, is there a true original copy of this somewhere? Is there somewhere, someday, is there a film going to come out that shows all these slices?
Well, right now, Bill Munns is supposed to be putting something together for Patricia Patterson, where they're going to sell a full-length copy of the Patterson Gimlin film. Because the original one that was left, the original film was with Ron Olson, which was... When his company went bankruptcy, it was sold out. Another company bought it. The original film is actually lost. They claim it's either in Florida or it's in another location, but the original film is gone. No one knows where it's at. There was only two copies made from that Ron Olson made. He gave one of them to John Green, and he gave the other one to Roger Patterson. Well, John Green made a copy for Randy DeHinden and another guy and another person. He made a copy from his copy, and Roger Patterson made two copies for himself, take around the show, and he kept the one copy that they made, like, video cassettes out of that they could put on TV shows. Because, see, when people see it on TV, they're not seeing a real film. All they're doing is seeing a VHS tape recording of the film. So they're really not seeing the whole film at all.
Okay.
Well, my golly, Leroy, I want to tell you, you're absolutely phenomenal. I got to get the... You don't mind, Leroy, you don't mind coming on the show, do you?
No, I don't mind.
Because we love, I mean, my God, I could spend an hour going through some of these things and people asking questions and all that stuff. And I think what I'd like to do in a couple shows is give a couple of you guys like a half an hour so that you can go through all the different details and then have people in the chat room and stuff ask questions and answer. And I think people would really be enthralled because we don't have a lot of time. But
yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about this and bringing to light a lot of the things that you found. I'm telling you, you're just amazing. Thanks, Leroy, so much.
All right, thank you, Marco.
And if you can hit your just little star six button, and we'll get Mitch. We'll get Mitch on.
Right.
Mitch, are you there, my friend? Here you are, Mitch.
Yeah, I'm here now.
Well, by golly, Mitch, why don't you let us know what's... This is Mitch. He's going to tell us what he's been doing for the last week. I didn't get the video posted there, Mitch, other than the last one that we had last week, but you got a new one that you're going to send me, right, later on here.
Yes. That'll be about the launch, and I'm working with Alex on getting some of his footage. So that's upcoming.
Uh-huh. Well, why don't you tell us what you've been doing for the last week here?
I've been preparing my equipment and so forth for our drive with Tom Viscardi. It's going to be quite a trip. So I've been readying all that equipment. We've got cameras up there in the mountains that we're going to have to put down for a little while I go around the country. We'll see what's up there. I guess the last time we were up there, Alex and I, we ran into a same smelling foot that we had before, week before. He was still in the same area. So we got cameras up in that area to see if we can talk him into walking in front of one of them.
Oh, that'd be good. Well, I posted a few of the videos and things that you've taken. You've taken a couple of that you're out from the car, basically driving down the road and taking it, plus a new one. And I've got those posted on the www Bigfoot Live website, bigfootlive.com website, right under where Mitch, where the show outline is for Mitch. I also have the the trailer that is on YouTube for the Patterson. Through M.K. Davis and his people too. So you got all your new equipment all ready, polished up and ready to go, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm ready to light them up at night. so we can put up.
Well, describe a couple of the things. You got some new equipment, and I think one of those was this infrared light source, correct?
Right.
You got it from Japan.
It's two large infrared floodlights. They have 48 large infrared LEDs in it. And that lights things up to where I can see about 75 feet or so in total darkness.
Wow, that's pretty good. Well, anything else going on? Or Alex?
We had the cat footage. Mitch sent me the cat footage. We had the whistling. Now, we got somebody that says the whistling was an owl. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. The northern saw owl is a smaller owl. And Mitch and I, you know, for the past 4 years, 3 years up there, we've known there's a large owl up there, in fact, a couple of them, probably great horned owl. It's a hooter, you know,
right.
And we got to see that big boy the other day. It's the horned owl, but he looks probably a lot like a speckled owl or the Eurasian eagle owl or the eagle owl from Africa. Now, I'm not saying this is the kind of owl it is, but he's huge. He has the coloring when he opens his wings and on his tail of an eagle. We saw him the other day and both said, "Oh, look at the eagle," but I think we probably saw the owl. And he probably wouldn't allow another predatory bird, smaller, like a weed owl, in his territory. So, and they're hooing or they're, you know, whistling. It's a it doesn't usually go on for 2-3 hours. Everything I can find says they make that sound a few times, stop, then make it again. I mean, we were hearing it at 20 minutes without a one single interruption, you know, and it did this for over 2-3 hours. So, Mitch, I'm not so sure that's a weed owl.
Well, I didn't think it was.
I couldn't hear you. You broke up.
Said I didn't think it was an owl.
There you go. I wasn't sure if you said you thought it was or wasn't. Yeah, you know, now I'm not saying they can't. Another thing you and I heard a few times was like a miss whistle. And, you know, owls are much better whistlers than me and you. They don't miss whistle too often, you know. And by that I mean, like you heard the air with no vibration, no musical tone. And that's something, you know, a human would do, or somebody with a vocal cords like a human, you know, maybe that aren't perfect for making these singing sounds. But the owls, you know, the calls make, their vocal structure is that they can make those sounds perfectly uninterrupted, you know, and they can change them too, so that's possible. But this was, you know, like a misfire a couple times, right, Mitch?
Yeah, we could hear him puckering a couple of times.
Correct. And we heard the answering from far off, and we at the very same time we heard the hooting of the, you know, what would be a great horned owl or a Magellan owl, you know, the big owls we have in Arizona. Seen them right in North Scottsdale, so they're here for sure. You know, and we do have lots of owls here. I just don't think the big boy would allow the smaller ones in his territory, and the smaller ones wouldn't want to be in his territory because he might get hungry.
Okay, well, thanks. We're running overtime right now, guys. I'll tell you what, Alex, why don't you sign off the show? We'll see everybody next week. Mitch and Alex, we'll see you next week again. Everybody take care. Go ahead. Alex, sign off, my friend.
Good night, everybody. Kudos and salutations from us to you. Keep bigfooting. Good night, Pop.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
Turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
Who are these prints up in Ball Club?
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like breaking day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is
size
like
and everything else. They just were too realistic.
And they're
to be
frozen like a tree.
Primitive manufacturer.
The hand was freaking
out. Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives.
Bigfoot lives. It's a movie.
Right now.
At
www.
Searching for Bigfoot.com.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters. magazine pairs and facts. When you brought them together, reason for the facts.